Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. That means that you get to pose your questions to us, and we collectively will answer them. We, meaning yours truly, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mutin, who is, I'll remind you, the possessor of a registered dietitian's credential, as well as a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How you doing? Getting used to 2016?
Yeah, except for writing it.
Keep saying it, 2016.
I know, 2016.
I'm used to the fact that it's January, but I've lapsed on my medical notes.
Yeah, 2016. Writing a check, 2016. Oops.
Right, you can sort of easily put a little tail on a 5 and turn it into a 6.
You can.
So yeah. That's the advantage of this year. So, all right, we have lots of questions. By the way, the way to get us questions is via radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And you can also check out drhoffman.com for a compendium of our top 10 podcasts of 2015, as well as our top 10 stories of 2015. That's a popular feature that I do at the end of the year. We're still sort of resuming. Something that I will be working on is I decided to do the worst stories of 2015. Stories like...
That's a great idea.
Some stories about how GMOs are just fine.
GMOs are okay.
GMOs are good.
All vitamins are bad.
Right, all vitamins are bad.
Yeah, you'll die.
let's make sure that everybody gets every single vaccine under the sun and stop questioning vaccines. It's settled science. Those are some of the themes of some of the worst stories of 2015, which we'll share with you at drhoffman.com. And what have you been working on lately? What are some of the stories you've been covering?
Oh, basically the differences between grass-fed and organic. I think it's time to revisit detoxification because it's January.
Right.
People are ready to detox and, you know, come away from overindulgence and so forth and how to change habits.
Are you doing a little bit of a detox for January? I mean, your diet is pretty good to begin with.
Yeah, I just kind of, I don't know, I just find it to be old hat for me. Doing it so often that it's not too difficult for me just to go back to program. It's not program. It's my life, pretty much. It's just,
right. So I'll share with you something that I'm experimenting with this month. I've been doing it from right around Christmas time. Is I've been following the Whole30 diet program, which is sort of a popular program that's kind of a paleo program. And it's not like I was doing badly before. I was eating very cleanly, natural foods. I was eating gluten-free. I was staying away from dairy. I was avoiding sugar, mostly, except I had a bad chocolate Jones. You know, 85-proof dark chocolate, but hey, there's sugar in it.
That's good. And 85 is good.
So, but I even further refined my diet on this Whole30 program. And I have to say, the word isn't out on it, but I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling, you know, clarity and lightness and an absence of some of the cravings that used to befall me, as everyone. So what I've had to eliminate is there's zero alcohol on this. And this was a challenge during the holidays.
Sure.
But zero alcohol. And, man, people are like...
No champagne for you.
People are sending me wine, booze, bottles, boxes of, you know, gourmet chocolate and all that stuff. And I've had to sort of forego that because the chocolate is, it's healthy. It's got the polyphenols, but it's also got a lot of sugar. So, you know, that's off. Also, I paid more attention to some of the products that I use. I used to really like to slather... natural mayonnaise on my, like a piece of turkey. Sometimes a little dry, and you got to put this now.
Sure.
But it's loaded with soy oil and canola oil, which are considered no-nos on this diet. And then it made me conscious. I realized how much of these oils are insidiously making their way into my body.
Yeah.
And that's not particularly healthy. It is not particularly healthy. You know, olive oil, extra virgin oil, healthy, pretty healthy. Coconut oil, pretty healthy. That's allowed on this diet. Yeah. I'm using more walnut oil in my salads.
That's good. That's good.
Which is a
unfortunately, and not to lead you astray here, but you know, turkey is an omega-6 bomb.
Yep. Yep.
Poultry.
Yep.
Is an omega 6. But hey, you got to eat. Hello. But
exactly.
You're right about some of the condiments.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise is a big one.
I'm going to write a review of that Whole 30 diet. And the rules are a little bit arbitrary, but you got to pick your battles.
Yeah.
Because you could find fault with virtually any food.
That's true.
You know, like the fish, certain contaminants, the imbalance in the poultry, the arsenic that sometimes is in the feed.
Right.
But mostly I'm having grass-fed beef, lots of eggs. I'm making frittatas, which are delicious.
They are.
With eggs and sometimes potatoes. Potatoes are allowed, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is not a no-carb or ultra-low-carb diet. You can have things like beets and potatoes, and I'm taking advantage of sweet potatoes because I need my carbs.
It's a whole foods diet.
I'm not overweight. I exercise a ton. I need carbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
For people who want to lose weight, they can cut the carbs in that program and do well. But there's no cereal grain, zero. And I used to do a lot of, I felt very virtuous. I was having gluten-free bread.
Uh-huh.
I looked in my refrigerator in my house in the country, and it's just like, it's loaded with gluten-free rolls, bagels, French bread. Delicious, you know, and I would slather butter on that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not having any of that anymore.
There you go. So, put it in the freezer.
Yeah, it's in the freezer. It'll, you know, be available for the summer crowd, you know, when the season begins again. But I'm not having any of that. Mm-hmm. And the goal is not weight loss, because I don't really want to lose weight.
You don't need to lose weight.
Then I have to get new clothes. Forget about it. So it's more about just exploring what mm-hmm. that does for my body. And we do sometimes ask our patients who are with very challenging medical conditions, like autoimmune diseases, sometimes to go on a paleo diet.
Yeah.
So I had been I'd sort of dabbled at it, but I thought I'd really experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. I actually like it. It's by thinking about the sources of the foods, it interposes a little barrier between you and grabbing just something.
Right.
And I think I'm eating cleaner, more natural. The other day I picked up some turkey burgers. I thought they were mm-hmm. fine. You know, I would have eaten them otherwise. But then I looked at the ingredients. There was Parmesan cheese, and there was, breadcrumbs in them. So I said, this is not on the diet. Let me just not mess things up.
Yeah.
No cheating allowed. So I went back and just exchanged it for plain chicken salad without mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
And a little dry without the mayonnaise.
Fresh, but brown turkey or something like that. That would work too.
Yeah.
And the better you feel, this is true for everybody. The better we feel, the more we don't want to fall back off and go to where we were, whether it's chocolate land, whether it's booze land, whether it's whatever.
Right.
Too much bread or anything
right.
like that,
so,
or all of the above.
And,
some, so.
You know, and I'm not theoretically opposed to a little drink now and then, but, mm-hmm. It does ultimately slow you down. It takes a little bit of a toll on your metabolism, so.
It's a mitochondrial poison, alcohol is, to quote Dr. Joseph Pizzurno.
Right.
But, it's also a proxy to sugar. There are different ways of craving sugar. For some people, it's chocolate and cake. For other people, it's bread and it's fruit. For other people, it's milk, lactose, and for other people, it's alcohol.
Right.
And it goes on and on.
And for me, it's chocolate and peanut butter. By the way, peanut butter, it turns out, is not on the diet because there's no legumes on the diet.
Right, right.
And
no grains, no legumes.
So I said, I can stop eating lentils and split peas.
Uh-huh.
But man, when it comes to peanut butter, I've got a serious Jones on peanut butter. It's like, whoa, I had to put the
to almond butter.
No.
Macadamia nut butter. You'll never go back.
Sunflower butter is actually a pretty good facsimile.
Oh.
It's not quite the same,
mm-hmm.
But it's permitted on the diet.
Okay.
I'm eating a lot of macadamias. Macadamias are rich in saturated fat.
Nice
and
buttery.
Yeah.
Very filling, satisfying.
And I'm having a lot of coconut oil. So
Great.
So I'll keep folks surprised of my experiment.
Let us know. Yeah.
It's kind of like this. At this age and, at this stage in life, it's not likely I'm going to be an astronaut. It's not going to happen.
Are you giving that up?
I'm taking
that off your bucket
I'm
list?
I'm taking it off because it's not going to happen.
Okay.
I might go space flight when it's commercial space flight, but I won't be an astronaut.
Who's the billionaire that's planning space?
Tusk or what's his name?
Elon Musk.
Musk, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
Musk.
Tusk,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. I knew it. Rhymes with Tusk.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's, Major League Baseball pitcher, not happening. Probably not happening.
All right.
But I can have sort of an adventure in diet. Right? I can't be Jacques Cousteau, right? So, but I can have an adventure in, this is my January adventure.
Adventures in diet.
Yeah.
That could be a title of something.
I'm exploring the Amazon jungle of dietary refinement. Okay, so enough of the preamble. And so what are some of the questions we have this week?
Okay, speaking of coconut oil, this question comes from Randy. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I see several chefs on TV use extra virgin olive oil, EVOO, for stovetop sautéing and frying, and I know it doesn't stand up to heat and it breaks down. Instead, I've been using the light olive oil labeled for frying and sautéing, but then I've heard health experts say that we should only use coconut oil or another suitable saturated fat for high heat applications. I'm reluctant to use coconut oil because it's so saturated, but then I hear a lot of flip-flopping on both sides of everywhere, you know, and I'm hearing a lot of reversals on reversals. What do I do?
Well, this whole direction that we took against saturated tropical oils was a real mistake.
Yeah.
The history of it is that a guy named, I think his name was Solovsky something, Sokolov, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Had a sort of, he's a rich guy who suddenly decided that tropical oils were the devil and undertook a public campaign taking out full-page ads in the New York Times about how palm oil and coconut oil were killing us. And so the net result was the fast food eatery said, fine, we can find even cheaper oils that are synthetic, like trans fats, and put them into fast food. The net result is that probably, you know, killed more people than all the recent wars combined, you know, because of the harmful effects of trans fats, which are now being banned, you know. This is how we come.
Imagine,
you know, like
now being banned.
The thing that 75 years ago was like the greatest health innovation, and you know, was touted when we were kids, is now being banned. So anyway, saturated fat from coconut oil, very definitely is not a problem.
No.
In moderation, obviously,
right.
You know, it's a caloric source. You can OD, but it's kind of hard to OD because of the satiety effect of fat.
That's
fat
true.
Is almost self-regulating.
That's true.
And unless you combine it, you know, if you have tons of that with a lot of carbs and sugar, then you're in trouble because you'll gain weight. But if you have it on, you know, appropriate low-carb diet, it's very good. The problem I find with coconut oil is very aromatic and it imparts a flavor. So what you do is you kind of go towards Indian-style dishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you use a little turmeric and you can make, you know, Indian-style, you know, curry-like chicken, things like that with the coconut oil.
You know what's wonderful in coconut oil? Sautéed scallops or shrimp with garlic.
Absolutely.
It is delicious because the scallops have a natural sweetness that goes with the coconut oil. Now, the difference, Randy's question...
Maybe a little ginger.
Yeah, maybe a little ginger or something like that.
Some cilantro or something like that.
The saturated fats are more stable under high heat cooking because of the way the molecules lay. There are no breaks in the chain. Olive oil has one break. It's a monounsaturated omega-9, and they don't sit so cleanly. And, of course, the vegetable oils have, which are polyunsaturated, many double bonds.
Right.
More
very vulnerable to heat.
Yeah, they're very, very volatile under high heat cooking.
And let's,
so they're
let's
not.
Name some of those. There would be safflower oil.
Safflower oil, sunflower oil, corn oil, canola oil.
What about grapeseed oil? Grapeseed is kind of a high-heating oil.
It has a very high smoke point, so a lot of people love to fry in that.
Right.
However, it's an omega-6 bomb.
Yeah,
again,
it is. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And peanut oil is also a high-heat oil.
High-heat oil, but very high in omega-6 again.
Right.
What I would suggest is you can use the olive oil. There is some research suggesting that it's going to fare better than at least the other the other vegetable oils. However, we really have to change our approach on our frying, sautéing altogether.
Right.
And start doing a little more braising or steaming and boiling and roasting and all of that.
I do a fair amount of sautéing, but sometimes, you know, I get a little distracted. I turn around, you know, and when I turn back to the frying pan, like the butter is burnt, is like brown.
It's burnt, yeah.
Or the, you know, the olive oil is smoking. It's like, okay, start over. You wasted it, you know, clean it out.
Because at that point it smells
with
bad.
A paper towel.
Yeah.
It's damaged. You don't want to put that in your body. But if just to heat it somewhat below the smoke point, probably the damage is not going to be irretrievable.
That's true. You know, so, people think, and you see a lot of chefs on TV, they're always on a high screaming heat. I think it's part of the drama. I don't know why. But we need to cook at better heats, slower,
I have been
slower,
sometimes,
longer.
I've sometimes been referred to in the kitchen as the blacksmith. It's like it's like a
you and my husband.
I'm at the forge. You know, it's got to be like red hot.
Sear it
right,
right
exactly.
Now.
But so for searing, you know. By the way, ghee is pretty good. Yes. Tolerates that pretty well because it doesn't. It has the butter fats, the butter solids removed from it, and it's not as easily damageable. Again, a saturated fat and animal fat, but also. Full of stearic acid, which is generally thought to be...
And butyric acid.
And red
vitamin A.
Right, right.
All good.
Yeah.
All good.
So,
Randy, I would steer you away from the extra light olive oil that's labeled for frying and sautéing.
It's totally refined.
It's very refined. It's been bleached. Yeah. It's been deodorized. You don't want to ingest that stuff.
No polyphenols. No olive. No
oil. So get the real thing.
No oleuropein.
Yeah.
None of these beneficial olive oil.
Yeah.
So the dark, really almost cloudy olive oils.
Yes, that's what you want.
Are where the greenish tint, usually sold in preferably in a tinted bottle, so it doesn't even oxidize in the sun. Those are the premium oils.
Right, right.
They're expensive.
Yeah. Just use it under a lower heat and, you know, you should be good to go. Thank you for your question, Randy. All right. We've got a question from Bruce. Dear Dr. Hoffman, here's a topic we get a lot. Can you discuss treatment for bacterial overgrowth of the small intestine? Can't seem to get rid of it. Just ordered some supplements. The new kiwi, I guess he's talking about Flowey, which is a prebiotic.
Right, right.
Please discuss that product as well. Thank you. Your radio show is great. You rock.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. So, yeah, I do also aspire to be a rock star. I've also put that on the back burner.
Uh-huh.
But it's really exciting that some people think I rock.
There you go.
Just talk about health. So that's a good thing. That's some compensation for not being a true rock star. So when it comes to SIBO, well, what is a small intestine bacterial overgrowth? This is a very popular diagnosis now.
Yeah.
We've talked about it for a long time in integrative medicine as either candida, which is a little oversimplification because it wasn't just yeast. It was yeast and or bad bacteria that was overgrowing in the intestinal tract.
Dysbiosis
is a better concept, meaning an aberrant growth of various things.
Bacteria.
Yeah, bacteria and fungus, which can cause an auto-brewery syndrome or bloating, irritable bowel, belching, GERD, any number of things can be attributed to that. What happens is that normally the small intestine doesn't contain many bacteria. It's not sterile, but it doesn't contain many bacteria. It's sort of a backflow from the colon, which is actually a bacterial, it's almost like a bacterial compost heap. The large intestine. The backflow goes in the small intestine. The bacteria proliferate where they should not. They create havoc. They release toxins into the system. You may even experience fatigue, brain fog, blah, 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 any number of things, even leaky gut syndrome, autoimmunity. Mm-hmm. These all are linked. So what do you do for it? Well, you can... one of the reasons why this has become a popular diagnosis in conventional medicine is that you now have a drug.
Yes.
So once you have a drug, see, erectile dysfunction wasn't such a big thing until you had the erectile dysfunction drugs, right? Similarly,
it wasn't really talked about until there was a drug to fix the problem.
And similarly, you know, the urge to pee more frequently wasn't, you know, it's kind of like,
yeah.
But now we have a whole raft of drugs, so now it's like, you know, a lot of medications for that. Soon there will be a new diagnosis, which is FSD, female sexual disorder or female sexual dysphoria. Which will respond to some new medications that have now been put on the market. There's already a couple. So
the female Viagra?
Right, the female Viagra, yeah.
Okay.
Coming back to SIBO, so how do you treat it? The conventional way to treat it is with xifaxans, a powerful drug that kills off the bacteria, suppresses. And it does so to some extent. Particularly helpful, I find, for people with diarrhea-predominant IBS.
Yeah.
Not so helpful for people with constipation-predominant IBS. And it works, but it often works temporarily because it's a very laser-like focus on certain bacteria, very easy for bacteria to overcome it and become resistant to it. So recently, you know, just earlier today, we saw a patient together who has SIBO.
Yeah.
And by the way, the way to check for SIBO is you do a breath test. The breath test, you take a certain... sugary substance, and then you breathe into a bag at certain time intervals afterwards, and you see if there's a production of either hydrogen or methane. And you remember that the Hindenburg, which is a blimp or a dirigible, was filled with hydrogen before it blew up. So those of you who have SIBO, I'm just kidding about this, but stay away from an open flame. Stay away from an open flame, right? You know, it's like, you know, literally, you know, you're like inflated like a blimp. So, so that,
and it can feel like that for a lot of people. It's not necessarily the bowel thing, but the bloating, and sometimes it's even.
Well, we had a lady with very bad SIBO, and she says, I mean, even though
extended,
she says she doesn't feel like eating anymore, and now she's quite overweight. Her husband says you should eat so you have energy because she's tired.
Yeah,
but she feels, you know, kind of on the, well, sometimes nausea is a manifestation of it.
Yes.
You know, chronic nausea.
Yeah.
We had a young man with that earlier this year or last year. So anyway, so that's the conventional approach. And in a natural approach, we like to use botanicals. Botanicals such as berberine, aromatic oils, such as oregano.
Yeah.
We use a couple of supplements, candibactin AR and BR. Mm-hmm. Also, allicin. Mm-hmm. From garlic is helpful. That's not in kyolic aged garlic extract, but it is in certain preparations. We have something called Ali Max now, which is a very concentrated form of garlic that's very antibacterial. Olive leaf could be helpful. We also want to work on motility because the stasis of the food that doesn't go down properly, it needs to be treated with certain medications sometimes. There's a medication called Domperidol. Not to be confused with Dom Perignon. I know it was just New Year's, but we're not popping
and
a cork.
And no champagne for you.
No champagne for, right, right, because alcohol is bad for this. But and there was no champagne for me, indeed. So there's also, so the things that promote motility, Swedish bitters, Iberogast is another thing that helps.
Ginger.
Yeah, good. And so these are good. And then we want to put good stuff back in with probiotics. It's not even clear which probiotic works best, different strokes for different folks. There is no one single one. I think people react differently. And then finally, and I think this is the ignored part, because in speaking to the patient earlier today, he asked the gastro, is there any particular diet I should follow? He said, nah, you just take the antibiotic.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake. Why? You'll explain.
Yeah. Well, that's a mistake because you go back to your old diet, which may have caused the SIBO in the first place, you're going to get more SIBO again.
Right.
You know.
And that's because your flora literally is dependent on what you eat. So if you eat a lot of sugar and refined carbohydrates especially, then the bacteria will proliferate.
Yes.
And you can starve them out a little bit with a lower carb diet or by avoiding starches and grains. And so some people do well with a FODMAPs diet or the SCD diet.
The specific carbohydrate diet, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So diet is essential. That's why.
Absolutely.
And this is not easy to overcome because people get it, they treat it, it comes back, it comes back, it comes back. So we want to break the cycle of bacterial proliferation there.
It's unfortunate that some GI doctors see that as that's just the natural course of things, maybe in their practice, that they're going to write a script for that antibiotic anytime they see them,
but
whether it's 3 months later, whether it's 3 years later.
Isn't it an easy kind of time-saving way of practicing medicine? I mean, if you have to see like 30 patients a day under the current system, you have to sit down with them and have this very detailed explanation of what to do and educate them, you know.
That's why doctors need to be referring out to qualified nutritionists to carry on that part of the conversation, which is important.
And your services are available, not just to patients who are seeing me at the Hoffman Center, but also you serve as an ancillary nutrition advisor to patients who have their own physicians outside in the community. So that's also part of your scope of practice. And I think that is important for those diagnosed with IBS, SIBO. It's really a combination of things. It is, yes, bacterial overgrowth. It could be food intolerances. It could be stress as a component, obviously.
Right.
And there are many, many factors.
People on PPIs.
Oh, that's a setup.
Every other person is given a script for a PPI. That could be why we have so much SIBO.
They actually tell us.
In and of itself.
They tell us when we want to test for SIBO, make sure the person's off the PPI.
Yeah.
Because it's automatically going to create
SIBO.
It suppresses.
There you go, folks. You're not supposed to take Prilosec or Nexium for longer than, 6 weeks, two weeks?
I'll give you a good reference for those who want to learn more about SIBO. It's SIBOinfo.org, I think. SIBOinfo.org. It's the website of Dr. Allison Siebecker, S-I-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, who I've interviewed on Intelligent Medicine. And she's one of the world's authorities on this subject. She's a naturopathic physician out in Portland, and she is quite expert on this. Also, yeah. There's a Dr. Pimentel, I believe he's in Oregon or California, who is David, I think his first name is, who mm-hmm. is also an expert on SIBO.
On SIBO.
But also, you know, natural and integrative treatment. It was both conventional and mm-hmm. alternative. That's all the time we have for this segment. But as many of you listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. So we'll continue our discussion, mm-hmm. our weekly Q&A with Layla, on part two of today's podcast. And give us a preview of what we're going to tackle.
Should men over 50 be taking these testosterone supplements on the market now?
Wow. Hey, I'm over 50. Maybe I should be taking something. We'll find out soon. Part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.